You've arrived here at a critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford, are you?
We are the TV BFFs, and this is a podcast about the TV shows that people love most. And Brandi, it's the end of the year, which means it's time for our annual end of year check-in. What were the best shows we saw this year? What were our favorite shows we saw this year? Before we dive into all that, and I have some specifics about the format of this conversation, as I always do, but just kind of writ large, how'd you feel about TV in 2025?
You know, 2025 was a real dumpster fire of a year.
Sure.
And so it is really great that there was a lot of really great TV. There were really great new shows. There were really great seasons that came back. There were like returning. There were really great series finales. And, you know, there were some misses, which we'll talk about. But like overall, I think it was a really good year for TV. And it was an exciting year for TV because I feel like there was so much originality.
Yes.
And that, I think, has been sorely, sorely lacking.
Yes, I agree. I think that's a great point. You mentioned new series, returning series. We'll get into the specifics of what we're going to do with our end of year list here. But as always, there's going to be a mix of best and favorites. And I'm looking at like my best short list, and it's a lot of first season shows. And I think the originality, the excitement of a new season, of a new series tends to jump to the top of lists. But to your point, some returning shows that really delivered, and then some returning shows that really didn't or have had to find their way.
And some new shows that I was so excited about. And then I just feel like it's like, okay, all right, I guess.
Here's looking at you, Alien Earth, for me specifically. It's like one of those. They're like, oh man, the expectations, the vibes were so high. And then it was just,
yeah,
fine. It was fine.
Yeah, for me, it's Welcome to Derry, and we'll get into it.
We can get into some recent new stuff now. So just okay. A little bit of level setting. So the last time we were on mics together was back in the summer. Mm-hmm. We did a Emmy nominations draft with our friends Darren and Christian. So the last time we talked was end of May. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of new shows since then, a lot that we haven't discussed yet. So I think before we get to our lists, and what we're going to do for our lists is we're going to collectively come to a top 15 shows of the year. We're each going to pick five favorites that are independent of each other, but then we're also going to come to terms, come to agreement on five best shows, our shared, the TV BFF stamp of approval, five best shows of the year. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, let's dive into some of these more recent shows that I know both of us have watched. You mentioned Welcome to Derry, mm-hmm. the kind of Stephen King, It universe, you know, expansion of that IP. We both watched it. What'd you think?
I wanted to love it.
Yeah.
And honestly, I thought it was a really strong pilot episode because it was such a surprising end to that pilot episode. I was like, okay, like they're doing this. Okay. Like, yes.
Yeah.
And then it just, I don't know. It just never captured me, which is crazy because technically it is based on like my favorite parts of any Stephen King book, which is when he goes back into like the lore and the history of all these areas. Like, I love that. And like, that's like, I think it's in the middle of, because it is divided into the section with their kids. Then there's this whole interlude in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then it comes back and it's when they're adults.
Right.
And the interlude in the middle, they talk about like all of the other times that like it has come. And so that's what they went in to, you know, to do this show. Like each season is going to be another time in the cycle.
Yeah. Right. So for the uninitiated, basically it scary Stephen King monster looks like Pennywise the clown. Basically is kind of like trapped in and around Derry and shows their face every 27 years. And then like shit gets weird. Kids go missing. Mm-hmm. People die. So the movies in the book is split up into two sections, each 27 years apart. And now the show is kind of going backward in these 27 year increments. And to your point, I agree. I liked the beginning. Mm-hmm. I also really liked the end because I think those sections felt a little bit more lore forward, lore mm-hmm. heavy. And that's the stuff yeah. that I liked. My problem with the season is that I didn't think the character work was particularly good. I also don't think some of mm-hmm. the acting was particularly good. I'm looking at a lot of those kids. I mm-hmm. think, I mean, they're kids, but, you know, some kids are better actors than others. I don't think they found the best.
Yeah.
I think we could safely say that Welcome to Derry won't be making either of our lists.
No.
I think we can also use this as a bridge, pun intended, to Stranger Things season 5. This will not be making a best or a favorite list because it's incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
We are recording 2 days before New Year's Eve, so the series finale has not yet aired. I had two drastically different experiences with the two drops. I loved the first four. I'm having issues with the second three episodes that have been dropped. I think there are some high highs in those episodes, but I think there's some very low lows. I am beginning to realize, speaking of child actors,
mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of these kids performed very well as kids and have, as they've grown, to be delicate, I don't think their skills have grown along with them, right? I'm looking at Will mm-hmm. specifically, he who is being asked to carry a lot this season, and I just don't think
mm-hmm.
the performance is there, but also I don't think a lot of the writing for him is there, which is tough.
Mm-hmm.
There's other stuff I really like, though. And again, like, the more lore we get, I think it looks awesome. I love a lot of the character pairings. I love, you know, Dustin, I think his journey is great. Sadie Sink and the actor who plays Lucas, I think, is fantastic. So, like, there's a lot of bright spots. I was just left a little cold by the middle section, so I really, really need the finale to deliver. But for now, I'm going to have to put, like, a not applicable, can't put it in any list right now situation.
I'm so sad because, like, I really, like, so I feel like my journey with Stranger Things was absolutely love the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Was pretty into the second season. Completely fell off in the third season, like with the Russia stuff. And I just wasn't into it. And then I feel like I came back in the fourth season. I was like, oh, this is good. This is good.
Fourth season rocked. Fourth season might be my one and four are like tops for me. Fantastic.
Yeah, they were so good. And so I came to season 5, like, pretty excited. And those first four episodes were very exciting.
Especially the fourth. The fourth episode might be...
The fourth one ending like that was just...
Like a top 5 series episode. Like, fantastic.
It was great. It was so good. And then these last three, I'm just like, wait, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. why are we still talking? Okay. Why... Did Will just call every, like, the world is literally ending. You guys just came up with this huge plan to mm-hmm. save things. But now we're going to, like, stop down just for, like, a second so that Will can come out?
Well, here's the thing. I don't mind the stop down. I don't mind the coming out. I think it's all necessary. My issue is, like, if you're going to come out to your mom and your brother and, like, your couple best friends in a bit more of an intimate thing, where it feels a little bit more like, I don't know, real and earned. But mm-hmm. when you're like,
yeah.
hey, everybody, ding, 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 I have an announcement. Murray, come on in. I've known yeah. you for 3 days. Let me just tell every single person on the call sheet this big thing. It just rang like very, very untrue to me. I didn't love it. And again, there are still some good things, like the whole arc with Steve and Dustin really working mm-hmm. for me.
That was really sweet. I think that, like, if this had happened in, like, kind of quick succession, I would have a little bit more forgiveness because it's like they were racing to get this done. Mm-hmm. But it's like, y'all took, like, look at how big these kids are now. They're grown. They're grown people now. And it's like, I'm looking past that. I'm looking past that.
Oh, yes. And I have things to say about that. I think, like, when people's first critiques of the season are, well, it's just, it took me right out of it because these kids are so old and I can't even pay attention because mm-hmm. these kids are so old and they're like 30. And I'm like, first of all, everybody calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
This medium has had a long and storied history of adults playing teenagers, right? Like, have you seen a single CW show? Have you seen any primetime show set in a high school from the last 30 years? Hell, my favorite show of all time, Friday Night Lights, right? Tim, Tyra, Lila, Saracen, all of these people, mid-20s.
Very annoying to work with people under 18 on TV shows.
Like, the suspension of disbelief you need for Stranger yeah. Things in the first place, like, get the fuck over it. Also, these kids, they're in their early 20s. It's not a huge stretch that they're playing 17-year-olds. It's not a big...
Yeah, they're not that old.
That drives me insane. That drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. It's like the people that keep still talking about like, well, the Bear's not a comedy, so I don't know what to do with this thing. I'm like, guys, just get over it. We're focusing on the wrong things here, okay? Like the quality of the content that we can talk about.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of other fantastic TV that we should absolutely get to. Okay, so here's how it's going to work, Brandy. The way we're going to do this, as I mentioned, we will start with the best of the year. Our five mm-hmm. shared collective best shows. We'll argue, we'll debate, we'll maybe just be in perfect alignment. I don't know. We'll find out. I would love for them to be shows that we've both watched.
Mm-hmm.
However, if that's not possible, if there's not five shows that both of us have watched all the way through that we really feel should be like super strong, then I think we can allow a little bit of like, all right, pitch me what you think, pitch me what you think. Once we get our five locked in, then we'll ping pong back and forth and just reveal what our five favorite shows are.
Great.
So basically at the end of this, we'll arrive at 15 shows that are the TV BFFs top shows of 2025.
Love it.
So let's start here. I want to start with, because I mentioned our Emmy show. So there are a few shows that we've talked about a lot already that I think have a solid contention to be near a best list. Let me tell you mm-hmm. what I think those shows might be.
Okay.
You can veto, you can approve, and we can go from there. I think
okay.
the three that come to mind that we've discussed in some depth, The Pit.
Yes.
Adolescence.
Yes.
The Rehearsal Season 2.
Yes. All three. Like okay, I'm on in complete great. Agreement okay, on all fantastic. Three. I could talk about all three forever. Like I think all those are three of the best shows that came out in 2025.
Bar none.
Will I ever watch Adolescence again? Absolutely not. But was it an amazing show? And I think that everybody should see it. Yes.
Yeah. Once. Fantastic. Yes. Maybe the best episode of the year, the third episode with the mm-hmm. The counselor.
Yes.
Absolutely fantastic. Okay, The Pit.
The Pit.
No question, right?
It was just, this is what I loved about The Pit. I love that it felt like a network show from the 90s. Mm-hmm. Like that's what, like when I tuned in, like that's what it was like. And even though I watched it binging it, I think that in season two, since I'm now like caught up with everything, I'm really going to enjoy doing it because they do week to week drops, right?
Yes.
Yes. And I think I'm really, that's going to be really fun. And I'm really excited about that.
Same. I also binged it and it was intense and traumatic and an emotional fucking ringer.
I could only do one episode a night.
I maxed out a three at a time, you know, like, and that
what?
Was. No, there were so many. There's 15 of them, you know, and I was trying to burn through them. But to take a little bit more time with it, to go week to week, I think is going to, and to give it a little bit more of that old school, because it does feel like a bit more of like that old school, intentionally or not, ER sort of primetime TV vibe. So to have the weekly.
And like, and just, and to talk about it each week, I'm excited about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just speaking of originality, like, yeah, it's a, we've had a million and a half hospital shows, but mm-hmm. we haven't had a hospital show like this.
In real
like
time, hour to hour. In
the real time, hour to hour, I think was just such a great, conceit.
It's phenomenal. Okay. So Adolescence locked in, The Pit locked in, and The Rehearsal mm-hmm. Season 2.
Oh, The Rehearsal Season 2.
Nothing like it. Even season one of The Rehearsal, I thought was like, paled in comparison to season two.
Just the fact that he, first of all, the first season of The Rehearsal is so weird. It's like such a weird and like just unusual concept that mm-hmm. like it just is a little bit like kind of mind bending, right?
It was a little all over the place. I feel like it kind of honed in a little bit in season two.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause like in season one, it's just like, wait a second, is this about like helping people do this thing or is this about you?
Him and the parents of it all and the kids of it all. And yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like season two was like much more, had a much clearer POV mm-hmm. of like kind of what was going to be accomplished and just but he still was able to use just like, just the recreation of the airport gate.
The recreation of Sully's entire life.
I mean, like he's still all of the things that made season one like so weird and unique.
Right.
Like,
but the same weird tangents. Like, let's take a break and talk about other forms of honesty and partnership, and did the whole thing about couples and
mm-hmm.
compared that to how this other airline pilot dates, and like, so it still had a lot of those kind of interesting meandering side quests.
I will never forget about that pilot, the dating pilot. Yeah. Like, I think about that every single time I fly. Moses does too.
You like get to the airport and you're like, I really hope our pilot and co-pilot are like having a chat right now. You know what I mean? I hope they're talking about their weekends.
I hope they're getting along. It's really important. It's really important for them to be getting along. Can I take a look in there? Yeah. No, the rehearsal season 2 is so good. If you haven't seen it, get yourself over to HBO Max and just, it's truly enjoyable. And I cried real tears because the finale is so great.
It's wonderful. Okay, great. We have 3 of our best locked in. I want you to take it from here. What else was in your best contention?
And my best contention was the final season of The Righteous Gemstones.
Okay, I didn't see it.
Okay. I loved it. It's Danny McBride is just one of the funniest people ever. The Gemstone family, like that show has the potential to be just like really silly and funny and like not have a heart, and it would still be great, you know what I mean? But like the way that he get like that every single character like has like depth, like the fact that Judy Gemstone has depth,
right?
Is, and the way that they bring that out was just, I just thought was really, really fantastic. Let me see. Things you might also agree on.
Let me ask you a question. Did you watch any of Pluribus?
Yes, I've watched all of Pluribus.
What do you think? That's a no.
Could understand why it would be a best show. Uh-huh. Do you know what I mean? Like everything about it feels very best. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
I do. Yes.
Just the acting is amazing. Like the cinematography is amazing. Mm-hmm. Speaking back to originality, like what?
Fantastic what? Premise. Wonderful. It's
like, like a premise I never, like I still am wrapping my head around. Uh-huh. I have a really hard time with Carol's character. And I think that
I think that's the point.
I know. And it's like, and I don't like, so like, that's why it didn't come up straight away for me. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh my God. But I could be down with that being one of the best. Cause I do think it is one of the best shows that came out this year, but it's just like,
Well, that's the thing. Cause I wonder, I watched it all week to week. And then over the past 3 days, I rewatched it and in a binge, it unfolded this interesting dynamic where Carol became, and I was never like anti-Carol, but I totally understood like, yeah, she's pretty unlikable for a lot of, you know, when she's really testing the hive mind. Quick backup. If you haven't seen Pluribus, the quick premise without spoiling too much is basically like this thing happens where the entirety of the earth becomes like a hive mind shared consciousness situation, except for this one woman named Carol and technically a handful of others, but I don't want to get too deep into it, but Carol is this woman played by Ray Seahorn, who was also in Better Call Saul. This is a Vince Gilligan show, his first show outside of the Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul universe. So Carol is like a very bitter, unhappy woman who is not capable of joining this hive mind for whatever reason and is acting out against them in a number of ways.
And we should also be noted that the hive mind, like it's just everyone's, it's very peaceful. Everyone is just happy and like getting along. And like Carol is like, that is not how the world is.
Well, are they getting along, Brandy? Because they're not actually interacting with each other. And that's the thing too. Like there's a lot of like AI undertones to this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like very interesting thought-provoking themes going on here. Mm-hmm. What makes a person? What happens if everything is great and copacetic and easy and we're all working together hand in hand in like ultimate socialism and no one wants for anything? Except that they do in different, in like weird ways that, again, I don't want to be too spoilery, so I don't want to get into here, but I don't know. Especially on a second watch, I was pretty blown away with Pluribus. And I had in my notes here, in my best, and I did a little bit of spot rewatching of Severance season 2 as well, which we spent a lot of time discussing, especially in our Mystery Box episode. And I think that there were just a couple lows in Severance season 2 that were a little too low. The Cobell episode, some of the naughty plotting in the middle that leaves that off a best for me, even though I really loved Chikai Bardo. And I thought the...
was that the backstory of the...
That was the Gemma backstory. Wife. And I love the Ortbo episode when they went off all into the wilderness. And I thought the finale, which I just rewatched today, was fantastic. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of good there. And maybe depending on where we land, maybe it lands in my favorites. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. I don't know. There's a lot of shows to choose from here, but
I had Set Friends and I wanted that one to be better. Cause that was another one where I was just like, I'm not enjoying this, but Pluribus, I have to say I am enjoying. It's just that like, it's hard to be watching something and not really be rooting for anybody.
That's interesting. Okay. You weren't rooting for Manusos?
No, after he decided to go through the Darien Gap, after they were like,
don't do it.
I'm interested in him. Like I'm definitely on board for season two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like I think that like I thought the finale was very, I thought it ended very, it was very intriguing. So it's like, okay. All right, I'm going to see where this goes.
Okay. I have one more maybe on my best list, but do you have any others as well? And are any of them unscripted? Because I have one left and it's an unscripted show for my best.
Yes. And my best, and this could also be a favorite, is Traitors.
Traitors season 3?
Yeah, the one that came out that was back in January, right?
I've got to veto that. I'm sorry. And I'll tell you why.
You didn't like that? Why?
I liked it just fine. But if we're talking best of the year, top five seasons of television I saw this year,
mm-hmm.
season 3 of US Traitors isn't even the top 25. I'm sorry, it's not.
Oh really?
And I'll tell you why. Because I saw 3 other versions of Traitors internationally that far exceeded it, and those will be on a different part of this list.
Okay.
The unscripted show I saw that I thought was the best non-Traitors unscripted TV mm-hmm. was Survivor Australia, Aussies versus the World. Now, I don't know if we can count this because I'm certain you haven't seen it. It's not even a...
I definitely have not.
It's not even an American broadcast. It's an Australian broadcast. But I had to mention it here under best because it is the best season of Survivor I've seen in decades. It is the best season of competition reality, full stop, I've seen in years. That includes all of the Traitors. That includes all of the Challenge. That includes all the things that we know and love. The level of gameplay, the characters, the storylines, the fact that they were able to do all of this in like 8 episodes over a 16-day game. Basically, the premise was, so Survivor has worldwide spinoffs. Australian Survivor is one of the biggest. It's one of the most celebrated. It's one of the...
Where are they at? Like in the outback? Like in that middle scary part?
I think they're in Samoa.
Oh. Oh, they're not in Australia.
But okay, they cast Australians, right?
Oh, okay. Got it.
So that's been going on for like 8 or 9 or 10 seasons or something like that. So what they did was they took the best of the best Australians and the best of the best from the worlds, which also include like Canadian Survivor and like all different types, Finland Survivor, right? But they included 3 Americans. Sandra from the Traitors.
Okay.
Tony from the Traitors.
Okay.
And our girl Parvati from the Traitors.
Oh, wow.
Okay. All 3 of them, former Survivor winners. I don't want to spoil it because if you can get your hands on it, I will just say that the Americans that we love went very far and it was fantastic. It was thrilling. Like I said, the gameplay, head and shoulders.
How many contestants?
I think they started with 14 people, 7 on each tribe, 7 on Australia, 7 on the world.
And only 8 episodes. Okay.
It was awesome. I don't know how they did it. It was like lightning in a bottle, absolute reality competition magic. I'm like, you just took the best casting and one of the best, and they didn't overcomplicate it. They didn't do any of the new era bullshit about this advantage and this and that and the third and blah, 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 blah. It was just make your alliances, play the game you think can take you to the end and let's see what happens. And it was glorious. So, okay. So here's what I would like to throw out there.
Okay.
We've collectively come across The Pit, Adolescence, and The Rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
You have put up Righteous Gemstone season 4.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting up Pluribus. I think that's our 5. Even though I haven't seen Gemstone season 4, I've seen enough. I've seen the first 2 seasons in full. And I trust you, and I trust Dana McBride, and I trust that show to know that, like, if that show, and especially it's a series ender, like, I trust that this is the correct pick on your recommendations. I think those could be our 5. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm into it. And honestly, with the Righteous Gemstones, if I were you, I would just watch all of them whenever you have a chance.
I will.
Like,
I will.
And they're also short too. I think they're like a little more than half an hour.
It's maybe one of those ones because there's so few like really good comedies on right now that I'm like saving it.
Yeah.
It's like it almost feels good to know that there's like a killer kick-ass comedy just there waiting for me when I need it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I'm like saving those last two seasons until like it's like break glass in case of emergency. You really need this right now, you know?
It was so good. And honestly, I thought that because I was like, you know what? I'm going to get back into Righteous Gemstones. I haven't watched a couple seasons. And so I put it on and I thought I was watching the most recent season. No, I was watching the season before. Like, I'm just going to finish this. And then I rolled right into the last season and it was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like this list. I think it's a solid list. I'm happy to recommend all of those shows.
I love it. The TV BFFs, top five best shows of 2025. The Pit, Adolescence, The Rehearsal Season 2, Pluribus, and Righteous Gemstone Season 4. Let's jump into our favorites. I can start only because we just kind of tangentially talked around it. My first favorite, it's The Traitors.
Mm-hmm.
It's not The Traitors US. It's not even The Traitors UK, although they did have a celebrity Traitors UK season that was pretty solid that aired this season.
Mm-hmm.
It's not The Traitors Canada Season 3, which just finished, which I also thought was fantastic. It featured a couple of folks that had previously been on Survivor. They did an interesting mix of a little bit of they've been on reality TV, a little bit of they're just normal people, but no one's outright famous, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No one's like commanding an appearance fee or anything like that. The host, I'm blanking on her name, but she is fabulous. You think Alan turns a look. Let me tell you about this Traitors Canada host. Fantastic. She's an actress. I think she was on that show Pan Am. Do you remember that show from like way back when?
Yes.
Yeah, she was in that. Anyway, it's not Canada Season 3, even though the cast was fantastic and it ended in a way that was satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
It's The Traitors Ireland.
You recommended this to me and I was very, very interested.
It's the first time they've done it in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the classic Scottish castle. They have their own
Irish castle.
Irish castle. The way that they engineered some of the challenges, the way that they made them feel more meaningful. There was one whole challenge where it's like, find the people that actually speak native Irish because you need to like you implement that into the challenge itself. So it felt like super, super on theme. The gameplay was fantastic. The people that were traitors and then weren't traitors, then were like all the things. Like it was just 10 out of 10 firing on all cylinders, Traitors. It's the most fun I've had watching Traitors all year. And I watched four seasons of it and this was the best one. So that's going to be my first favorite pick is The Traitors Ireland.
How can we watch that? Can I find it on YouTube? Because I would actually be interested in watching this or like, can I search Reddit?
You can search, one website to be aware of, all I'll say is Dailymotion.
Got it. Okay.
Yep.
Got it.
That's all I'll say. Okay. What's your first favorite pick of the year?
Okay. My first favorite pick of the year, I think I also talked about in our Emmy episode. I've definitely talked about it before, but I love this show and how you were just talking about how like you were like saving Righteous Gemstones because mm-hmm. it's like you want like something to go back to. Like it took me a while to finish watching this because I loved it so much. So I was like, I don't want this to be over. And I think it's only like 8 or 9 episodes. But that show is forever and it is on Netflix.
You did mention this. Yeah.
It is based on a Judy Blume book. And it is just fantastic. It's the story of young love, like these two teens.
Mm-hmm.
They fall in love. They end up like the Judy Blume book. It's one of like the banned books in schools because the teenage couple decides that they want to have sex. And they do.
Oh, God forbid.
And yeah, you know, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
But the TV show version, they are, all the characters are black. It reminds me of the Rewatchables podcast where they're like, what if we redid this with an all black cast? And that's what they did. It's Mara Brock Ali was the showrunner, kind of creative force behind this. And like, she's awesome. And just everybody's great. So it's like the girl, her name's Keisha. She is trying to be a track star. She had to start going to a different school because there was this big like sexting scandal. Like she was dating this basketball player and he happened to send like these very like these pictures that he shouldn't have sent or showed his friend. And it just got to be a whole big thing. So she ends up going to a different school, and like, she's, you know, she's living with a single mom, and like, her whole thing is like, she just got it. She's going to get out. She's going to Howard. Like, that's what she's doing. Right. Justin is the boy. He, his parents, he comes from like a pretty wealthy family, also goes to like a private school. They end up meeting at this party, and like, he's just so sweet and just reminds me of everything that I ever wanted in a boy in high school. and they just have such like, their dynamic is just, it's just great. It's just a great, great show. And I wish that there had been shows like this when I was 14 or 15, like not only like seeing myself like on screen, I love it. And it wasn't, and you know what I really love about it is that it's a show about Black people set in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about like gangs and drugs and baby mamas and
right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though there was this one time where like Justin was driving back from Keisha's house, and it was he thought that cops were like following him, and it was a very real like, oh shit, like, you know, I hope everything is okay.
Yeah.
And like, and his mom is always, she's like, you know, you can't be out, like, but it all is like very real. So Forever, it's on Netflix. It's great. I want to say it's 8 episodes, maybe 9 episodes. It's a really fantastic watch.
I love it.
You'll laugh, you'll cry.
I will add, my next favorite is also one that we talked about on our last podcast, the Emmy one. Like you said, you picked Forever during that. I picked this show during our last draft. I try not to do a ton of doubling up, but this one, it just couldn't be ignored. It's going to be Andor season 2.
Mm-hmm. Which I think I'm going to watch it.
Really? You've said this every time, Brandy. So
I know, but now I think I really am, because I've been, I really enjoyed one battle after another.
Now we're talking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've and everything that I'm reading about that is just like, Andor is always coming up in the conversation. It's like, you know what? I got to watch this show.
Yes. What happens when people who are oppressed fight back?
Yeah.
Against fascist regimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's an overriding theme in a lot of some of the best entertainment this year. And Andor mm-hmm. certainly is the best sci-fi fantasy show I've seen all year. The best version of Star Wars maybe I've ever seen. Another show that I rewatched some episodes, you know, 2 or 3 times. Again, I've been verbose about this show in the past, specifically when talking with our friend Christian Banda. He gets it. A lot of people get it. Andor season mm-hmm. 2, absolute favorite of the year. Has to be on the list.
I can't wait to get it.
Fuck yeah. It's going to be great. I can't wait till you do. Okay, what's your next favorite?
Okay, my next favorite is a show that I had been hearing a lot about. It was all over my algorithm, but I'd never watched it. And then a friend of mine was like, you should really check this show out. And so I was like, okay, fine, I'll watch it. And it, I feel like I have kind of having picked Forever, and now with this next show, like, I've got a theme going of okay. like of a YA theme.
Okay.
And so my other favorite show of 2025, which it aired its final season. Well, I think that they're going to make a movie about it, but the final season aired this year.
What is
it? And that show is called The Summer I Turned Pretty.
Oh my God. So a blind spot for me, but absolutely took the internet over for like yeah. 2 months there. That was all I was talking about.
Yeah. And so I got on the train and did not want to get off. I ended up binging the show, and like, I would just watch an episode or two like every morning. And I loved it.
What, was this a Prime show?
This was on Amazon Prime. Okay. And the gist of it is, it's about this girl. Her name's Isabel, but they call her Belly, which I think is the worst name.
I know nothing about anything about this, but that drives me crazy.
And so her parents are getting divorced, but she and her mom and brother, every summer they go to Cousins Beach, which is very Martha's Vineyard coded.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom's best friend, Susanna, has this big, wonderful house there. She's like very rich. And Susanna has 2 sons, Connor and Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. And they are both fine as hell. And Belly has been in love with Connor since she's like, you know, like a little girl. And like, right. he is, you know, Mr. Like, and he's so hot, like,
wait,
so,
and
like,
sorry.
So unattainable.
Can I interject?
Yeah.
Because it was Connor versus Jeremiah is all I heard about.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't realize they were brothers.
Yeah, they're brothers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're brothers. And I mean, the back and forth of these brothers and this girl is something else. And it's just, it's an easy, an easy, fun watch. So yes, my next favorite show is The Summer I Turned Pretty, and I recommend it, but I will, fair warning, you are probably going to get sick of Belly. And how I was talking about how, like, I don't like Carol, like, mm-hmm. I didn't know the show, it's like, I don't think I like Belly.
Yeah. On the note of fun romance based on romance literature, my next favorite show is Heated Rivalry.
Oh my God.
Now, we were texting before we got on the podcast today, and I'm wondering, how far did you get? Because you said you started it today.
I started it literally minutes before you texted to see if we could change the time of the podcast. Literally, like when
you're welcome. Text, you're welcome.
I was yeah. at I'm still in the first episode. In fact, I'm still literally I'm at the part where he goes up to his hotel room. That's where I'm at. So I'm not that far.
I can't believe you were able to pull yourself away from that scene to start recording.
I had to feed my children. So I had to turn it off. I was like, oh, I can't watch this on the TV. This is a little screen show.
Yeah. This is a private screen show.
And also, I just like everyone to know that, hold on,
let me back up here. Haven't seen Heated Rivalry, if you haven't heard of Heated Rivalry, I wonder what your what algorithm do you have? Because it's all I've seen, which makes a lot of sense. One, sports fan. Two, queer individual. Three, just a fan of fantastic television. And this hits all of the boxes.
All the boxes.
Heated Rivalry is a 6-episode Canadian show. Good for Canada, really. Between the Traitors and this, I'm just like, my last 3 months have been just been fucking wonderful, thanks to Canadian television. So I appreciate that. But basically, it's a book series. There's like 5 books in the series, and it's basically about just like gay hockey players. What if we lived in a world where a bunch of hockey players were really fucking gay? And it's awesome. And it starts with like this rivalry. Get it? Heated rivalry between like this Canadian player and this Russian player. And it's does this really fascinating thing with timelines. Like the first episode zooms through like years of plot and chance meetings and interactions between these two players who are closeted gay, but start hooking up. And then it just goes from there. It's not a big spoiler, happens right away. And then the story goes from there. But then as the season develops, more characters show up. There's this guy named Scott Hunter that I think you're going to be a really big fan of, who's more of an elder statesman in the hockey scene. And he has a storyline.
The gay hockey scene?
I don't want to say too much.
Okay.
But it kind of influences some of the Shane and Ilya stuff that we're watching. And then I just have to say episodes 5 and 6 of Heated Rivalry season 1. Are just pure dopamine, just pure emotion, absolute phenomenal television. If you look at the IMDb ratings, like it's a very, very rabid fan base. Like every episode is rated like over 9 out of 10.
Wow.
The final 2, episodes 5 and 6, are both rated 9.9 currently on IMDb.
Wow.
Which I think is a bit inflated, don't get me wrong, but it speaks to the passion that the fans have for this show. I mean, my stepsister has watched it through like 4 or 5 times, and it's all we text about right now. Like, it's just, it's a fascination. It's an obsession, more than a fascination. It's an obsession, and rightfully so. It's just really, really, really well done, romantic, exhilarating, thrilling, cathartic, emotional, sexy television. It's just, it rocks. It's so good, and it's one of my favorites of the year.
I yelped.
Yeah.
But also the other thing is, because I was also texting with Moses while I was watching, I was like, oh my God, Mo, I was like, this one character, I was like, he kind of looks like a low rent version of you. I was like, and I'm not going to lie to you, it's very weird for me to watch him hooking up with this extremely hot man.
Right. You're talking about Shane Hollander.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'm actually getting mad.
Right.
I'll tell you what was exhilarating, though, and this is also not really giving a spoiler away, because like the hook, like I said, I'm maybe 20 minutes in and like we're here.
It's hot and heavy. Yeah.
Well, the scene when they after they would or have worked out, like they've been like biking and like kind of like trying to beat each other, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they're sitting across from each other and the Russian has a water bottle and he hands it over to Shane. And as he hands it over to him, he like purposely like kind of caresses his hands, yeah, or like his fingers. And I was like, oh my God, like, because my first thought was like, oh my God, he's about to get his ass beat. And then he didn't. And I was just so happy, but also so mad that like, that was my first thought that like, you can't do that.
Right. Tough hockey guy. What are you doing?
Yeah. Right? Like, are you crazy?
Right. Right. Like,
I'm just happy that we're in a world now in 2025 where
And Brandy, wouldn't it be great? And this maybe is a little pie in the sky, maybe some naivete as well, but wouldn't it be great if a show like this becomes such a sensation that you get dudes in major professional sports being like, well, if this show has such strong support, maybe it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to come out even while I'm still an active professional athlete. You know,
love that.
It would be phenomenal.
I would love that.
Yeah. Oh my God, I would love it.
All right, so heated rivalry. I didn't know it was just six episodes. So that's even more exciting. I will be finishing that this week.
Right, exactly. Small screen, private screen.
Yeah, so yeah. On the small private screen.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's three for me, two for you. What's your next favorite of the year?
My next favorite of the year is another kind of teen-ish. Well, actually, you know what? This kind of combines queer and teen. And that is Overcompensating.
I knew it before you even said it. It was on my almost list. Didn't make my list, but it was very close. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you picked it.
I loved it. I'm so sad. Like, that was another one that I was like, I don't want this to be done. I can't, like, yeah. So I didn't just binge through it. I was like, no, I'm taking my time with this one. Like, after I saw the first episode, I was like, I love this. I was like, I'm taking my time with this one. So this is on Amazon Prime. I think I've talked about it. I think I may have talked about this when
we mentioned it last episode, I believe.
Yeah. And it is Benny Drama, Benito Skinner, mm-hmm, who is like one of just my favorite like social media personalities. And now, and so the show is about he's going off to college and he is not out. And he's kind of like a jockey guy.
Honestly, a pretty good double feature with Heated Rivalry.
Yeah.
Now that we're mentioning it, right?
Yeah, like, it really is.
Closeted, athletic guy,
positive, you know? Closeted hot guys, yeah. Hot athletes,
right? Exactly.
Like being all nervous. I love it. And yeah, so Overcompensating, I just really love it. It's very it kind of reminds me of like the teen movie renaissance of like the late 90s. Mm-hmm. It gives me those vibes, and like I love a college party movie.
Yeah.
And this is like a college party show. And it's really fun. It's kind of set in this like
mid-2000s.
Early 2010s. Yeah, it's mid-2000s.
Mid-late 2000s. Yeah. Like when I was in college, it's like I was in college 05 to 09. It's like right in that general area, I want to say.
Yeah, because it's definitely, it's after me being in college. Because I was in college from 99 to 2003.
Yeah. It's more my, so
it's like, yeah. Yeah, because it's like people have smartphones, but like social media hasn't become as toxic as it is now.
Facebook was still for college emails only, put it that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
.edu's only on Facebook. It's funny, I had Overcompensating on my almost, you know, honorable mentions. Also, next to that, I had Adults.
Ugh.
Here's the...
That's where I went with Adults.
I loved it as a binge. I did it all in one day, and I think it's a nice little... four-hour capsule. I think I watched it on a train,
okay,
you know, from, like, upstate New York down to the city, and I'm like, it just... I think about it more than I thought I would. And I followed some of the cast, and I just feel like that cast is so strong. Like, I feel like this first season maybe went under the radar. It is renewed for season two. And I think season two was going to have a lot more oomph behind it and also a lot more eyeballs on it. And I think that and Overcompensating. And I'd throw I Love LA in there as well. These kind of, this triumvirate of like early 20s, late teens, early 20s shows from this kind of next generation of comedic creators. Mm-hmm. I'm interested where all three go, but I think you're right in identifying that of the three, Overcompensating is the leader of the pack for sure.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So that is three favorites each. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a hard left turn here.
Okay.
Completely different tonality and genre. I'm going to go with, and I know you haven't seen it because it's not your vibe, because it's dirty HBO suburban crime. And the show is Task.
Dirty white folk.
Yeah, dirty white folk crime. Task.
Okay, sell me.
From Brad Inglesby, who did Bear of Easttown. And it's just kind of his next chapter in his ongoing saga of like gritty, real people caught up in, you know, not totally lawful business in the outskirts of Philly, suburbs of Pennsylvania. I just think he writes characters so fucking well. And mm-hmm. Tom Pelfrey is a lead in this. He played the brother of Laura Linney in Ozark. Mm-hmm. And then also freaking Mark Ruffalo stars in this. Mm-hmm. And then a whole huge cast of like mostly non-American British speaking people who just absolutely nail this Philadelphia accent, this Delco accent. But it's like, you know, it's your classic like a desperate guy trying to help out his family, starts knocking over drug houses, and then gets caught up in this task force gets formed to figure out who's doing this. But is that really all that they're after? And it's not really a whodunit, because you figure out what the crime is and who's doing it and how and why pretty early on. It just becomes mm-hmm. like, how are these people that I've come to love and connect to? Can they? Will they? My God, I hope they make it through it. Meanwhile, Mark Ruffalo is dealing with his own family trauma because his adoptive son is in prison because his meds ran out during COVID and he accidentally killed his wife. It's just like, there's a lot going on. It's heavy. It's very, you know, it's like trauma at the center of everybody and all things is one of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's another, now it's the second television show from Brad Inglesby that tells me like, oh, this guy really has it. He will be a name like when I see in the trades, like, oh, new Brad Inglesby show.
You're down.
Signing up day one. And they announced Task season two, which is interesting. And my dream would be, and this is not an original thought, many people have said, but wouldn't it be cool if this task force just tangentially runs up into Mayor of Easttown and Kate Winslet maybe just has like a couple scenes. Like, I don't know, maybe it's all the same world though. So nothing's out of the realm. And I think that'd be really fucking cool. And I'm into the Delco crime universe that Brad Inglesby is starting to kind of put together here. So for all those reasons, Task is number four on my favorites list.
Okay.
Did I sell you? No. Still too dirty. Still too suburban.
I don't know. Maybe, because it feels like that could be like a co-watch.
Here's what you do. Wait until season two is announced and has a premiere date. And then that's when you do season one, is in the run up to season two.
Okay. My next, so there was like a tie for me with my next favorite.
Okay.
It was a tie. So I'm going to say what both of them are, and then I'm going to tell you which one that I feel won.
Okay. But this is your fourth.
Yeah, this is my fourth. But I have another one for, I have another one.
I got you.
So for this one, it was between two shows. The first is a show that is on Peacock starring Shiv Roy. And it's called All Her Fault.
Okay.
The other is a show that was on, I think, Netflix. And it's with Claire Danes. And it's called The Beast in Me.
Okay. This is, before you go any further, I'm so glad that both of these are on your, one's going to be and one's not. Because I haven't watched either.
Okay.
And all I've been hearing for the last 3 months is like, there's these thriller miniseries that you really should be watching, and these are the two, and I haven't gotten around to either of them. So sell me,
okay,
quite frankly, on both, and then tell me which one you picked.
Okay, so both of them are pretty great.
Okay.
And I will say that the Beast in Me suffers from what I feel Porbus suffered for me, which is that like I don't like Claire Danes character at all. She's the worst.
Is it like just classically like over intense, slightly half manic, constantly Claire Danes? Like she's
doing? Except that like in Homeland, I was with her. But in this one, I'm like, oh, God, you suck.
In Fleischman, you were with her, right? Because you
in Fleischman, I was with her. I was really with her. But in this one, it's just like, oh God, like you're, but like, but also like it makes sense that she's like that, because like the premise of The Beast in Me is that Claire Danes is an author who wrote like a really, really like critically acclaimed book that she's just kind of been riding on since she wrote it. She has a son, a 7-year-old son, who was killed in a car accident. And the car accident happened because this kid drove into them. But then like it all gets unpacked, like whatever. But the instigating conceit of the show is that she lives in Oyster Bay, like this very exclusive community, I think on Long Island. Mm-hmm. And this extremely rich billionaire type, like Kendall Roy, except like smart, actually, because the dad, like, is the rich guy's dad is actually played by Mike Ehrmantraut.
No shit. And the rich guy is Matthew Reese, who I love.
Is Matthew Reese, yeah. And so he's like a billionaire type developer, and so he moves in next door to her, and like his whole mystery behind him is that he had this wife that went missing, and everybody just assumes that he murdered her. And so the story kind of begins when he and Claire Danes' character, who, oh my God, she has the worst name too.
Oh, I remember reading it. It's like
Aggie.
Aggie.
That's her name. Short for Agatha.
Tough.
So the show is really about the relationship between Aggie and Niall, who is the Matthew Reese character. And, you know, did he kill the wife? Did he not kill the wife?
Like, right. What happened?
What makes somebody what kind of darkness lives within us all? Right. Mm-hmm. It is kind of a murder mystery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that, All Her Fault is going to kind of take this spot for me, because whereas The Beast in Me was kind of a murder mystery, like All Her Fault really was a mystery. And I was very surprised at how it all shook out.
Oh, fun. Okay.
And I really enjoyed that. So All Her Fault is Shiv Roy, Sarah Snook is the main character. Her son, the instigating event is that her son goes missing.
Okay.
And as a mom of two young kids, the way in which the son went missing is absolutely terrifying. And this isn't a spoiler, because literally this is the first 5 minutes of the show. She met a mom at like a gala for the kids, like private school. And like, they really got along and they were like, yeah, we should, you know, the boys should hang out. Like they should have a play date. This other mom, who's played by Dakota Fanning.
Oh, love her.
Texts her and is like, hey, like, you know, can Milo and I think her son's name is maybe Jacob or something. My nanny can pick them up. They can have a play date. And she's like, oh, of course. And this is like all over text. Dakota Fanning texts back. She's like, hey, you know, you can pick him up. You can just pick him up at our house. Gives her address. So the show starts with Sarah Snook showing up at the house to pick up her son. Woman answers the door and she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's not here. Like, I don't know. I don't even know the people that you're talking about.
Whoa.
And so her son is gone.
This is interesting. I watched the trailers for both and I was definitely more intrigued by All Her Fault. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is like, so I am not married, no kids, but I think frequently about my friends who do have kids and the process of gaining parent friends because your kid happens to be friends with or wants to play with or have a play date with this other kid. You're stuck. You're like, you're connected to these other parents, whether you like it or not. And it's like, you don't know them. You don't know what they're about. You don't know what they like. You don't know what they say, what they think. It's like, that must be a true mindfuck. Like, you don't get to choose your friends.
No.
You know? And like, what if they're, who the hell knows? You know what I mean? So like, that part of it had me intrigued.
It made so much sense that she would have been like, of course you can have a play date. Cause when you meet somebody and you click with them, it's like, oh shit. And our kids are the same age. This is perfect.
Right. Right.
You know, cause it is really hard to find, like, cause you really never know.
Right. It's terrifying now that we're talking about it. Like,
yeah,
it's just a sea of unknown people you must interact with. That's crazy.
All the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, All Her Fault, that's how the show starts. And so the show is about like, are they going to find Miles? So then you then meet, so she's the guy, there's her husband who's played by Jake Lacy, which.
Oh.
You see that fucking guy.
What's up, White Lotus asshole? Yeah.
Yeah. And then he has a brother who is disabled and in a, from an accident that, the sister caused. The brother, I'm not sure who that actor is, but the sister is Abby Elliott.
Oh, it'd be nice to see her outside of the bear. That's nice.
Yeah. But really the show is about like just this really unfair pressure that is put on mothers, because when the police come to talk to them and they're like, so you just you were just texting with her. You didn't like call her. And then the husband has the nerve to be like, well, did you check the number against the number on the contact sheet?
Who does that?
What the fuck? No. And so, and then with Dakota Fanning and her husband, she works in publishing and like has got a very like super, super stressful job. She's trying to land this big author. Mm-hmm. And the husband is a high school teacher and just isn't picking up any part of the slack for her.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so she and Sarah Snook are really like bonding. But I think I really love the show because The Beast in Me is also about motherhood in a way. Mm-hmm. But all her fault, like it really like, I mean, the title says it all.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just really I loved it. And that is going to be my fourth favorite. I'm going to put that one over The Beast in Me.
I mean, as you talked it out, I'm like, it's not even close. It's going to be all her fault, of course. And now I know that'll be the one that I watch before Beast in Me. Because I love Matthew Rhys. I agree. I do have a little bit of a Claire Danes allergy if it's the same sort of mode and method.
The trembling lip.
Yeah.
Girl.
Exactly. Okay, my final favorite show. I want to shout out a podcast that I love called House of R. I bring them up because they will often talk about how it's these two friends, these two women who talk about shows that they love. Or sometimes one of them loves a show much more than the other. But the act of talking about it raises the level for, it's like a rising tide lifts all boats situation. Mm-hmm. And I think about that a lot. Like watching a thing and loving it is one thing. But then watching it and getting to experience it in different ways and talk about it and revel in it and all of the, and share it with other people who also love this thing in your life, I think is fantastic. And for that mm-hmm. reason, I'm picking, it's a bit of a cheat, but I'm mm-hmm. picking SNL 50 and its mm-hmm. related content mm-hmm. for my final favorite pick. So that's the anniversary special,
mm-hmm.
that's the music documentary, and that's the four-part Beyond Saturday Night, four mini-docs. All this is to say, I love SNL. I will always love SNL. I worked there as my first job out of college. It will always hold a special place in my heart. I think that SNL, the 50th season, was one of its strongest in recent memory. Mm-hmm. But the 50th anniversary special, the programming around it, specifically the one where the cast is going back to look at their old auditions, literally mm-hmm. brought me to tears. And then the one where you get to see what a week is from the perspective of mostly the writers, but just like what production at the show looks like from Tuesday to Saturday. Like I lived that for half a year. Mm-hmm. That was my job, was to be at that desk. And then to top it all off, like we did our SNL podcast and the preparation for that and watching clips and going back and watching the old documentaries, figuring out how to talk about 50 years of one show in a specific, you know, hopefully concise enough conversation to make it podcast friendly. Like all of that put together, I'm getting a little emotional right now. All that put together is just like the shit that I love and the shit that I live for. And it was just really special and important to me this year, especially this year, which was pretty tough for me in a lot of ways. And that was like a real, real bright spot.
Yeah.
You know, I watched it with my family and then I got to talk about it with my friends and it was just wonderful and lovely, and I loved it. So SNL 50 is my final favorite pick.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that that is going to be on this list, because I feel like that was a big part of 2025.
Yeah, huge, right?
You know?
Kind of started us off. Like it was a big February event. Like this kind of kick-started the year in a way. Yeah.
So I definitely, I'm glad. I love that. Okay, my last one is Hunting Wives.
Is it really? Fuck yes. Let's go.
I loved Hunting Wives. I didn't know that I needed an over-the-top, campy lesbian soap opera, but here we are. Here we are. It was like, because you know, first of all, I love Housewives. Okay.
Sure. Yes.
And Hunting Wives was just like, you know what? Let's make Housewives, but let's make it scripted and like, let's make it a little queer.
Feels like the log line. Like that was what was pitched in the room, you know?
Yeah. I just thought it was so much fun. It was just fun to watch. And I love that like every episode ended on like a cliffhanger. It just felt like, I love it when TV feels like the like TV that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's what it felt like. That felt like a show that like wasn't supposed to be watching. It came on at 10.
Yeah, right. Like you're sneaking it. Yeah.
And I'm going to sneak in for that one. And I loved Malin Ackerman. And because I also did a rewatch of The Comeback.
That's right. Because season 3 was announced this year. Yeah.
I actually did a rewatch of the whole thing. Because I think it's only, what, maybe 15 episodes total, like seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah, I guess probably like a couple 8-episode seasons or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like I already like was, and I think I finished that rewatch right before Hunting Wives came out. And then I saw it was like, oh, it's June.
Yeah. No, I love the Hunting Wives. I thought it was fantastic. I'm thrilled that there's a season 2.
Mm-hmm.
The Brittany Snow Renaissance is real. Like Hunting Wives, Beast and Me. She's in that Murdaugh, the scripted version of the Murdaugh murder. She's in that. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, bring it on. I love it.
And she's also like really, because if you recall, she was really like playing like the really terrible white supremacist type characters for a minute.
Oh, because
I think missed that, she maybe. Was that like in Nip Tuck. And then there was one other thing, or maybe she was just really.
Oh my God. I forgot she was in Nip Tuck.
Nip Tuck is that. That's one that I feel is maybe due for a rewatch. Like that show was wild.
Same. I'm going to pitch this right wild. Now. An offshoot Nip Tuck recap podcast. Can I tell you, Brady, that was the first. Now, especially now in a world where Netflix is about to buy Warner Brothers Discovery, when it was still. Quaint little, I'll ship you 2 DVDs a week.
3 DVDs.
The first show I ever Netflix DVD binged watched was Nip Tuck.
I think it was for me too. Like, oh God.
You couldn't say 3 words without me figuring out a way to talk about the Carver and who we thought it was. No matter, you know what I mean? Like no. That was peak early influential TV for me, especially when it comes to like learning how to be obsessive about TV shows.
Yeah. And I feel like it also came out at a time when we didn't have like there wasn't like the big picture or yeah, the watch or yeah. Like there weren't people talking about it. So I don't know, Dan, I think that there might be a market for a Nip Tuck reload.
Okay. Wow. All right. So before we recap and read out our list, let's do a little bit of almost shows, honorable mentions. The Chair Company didn't quite get there. And as far as like weird, weird, weird comedy goes, I love Tim Robinson, but I think Nathan Fielder mm-hmm. kind of took the cake on that one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the couple I want to mention here, and they kind of, I have them in like couplets. Mm-hmm. 3 shows that have, like they've been around for a while and had returning seasons that I loved. The Gilded Age, mm-hmm. season 3 of The Gilded Age. The Diplomat, season 3,
mm-hmm.
I really, really liked. And Hack, season 4.
Mm-hmm.
Those are 3 shows that just continue to be strong, continue to absolutely deliver. They really could have made a best or favorite if not for me wanting to talk about new things, quite honestly. But mm-hmm. those 3 were really, really strong and really close.
Hacks is on my list. That was like very, very close to being a favorite for me because yeah. I thought that this was a really, and because I was wondering how they were going to do it. I was like, okay, like how often can we have Ava versus Deborah?
Yeah.
Like how many times can yeah. we play this song?
And I think that's why I didn't make it. I thought it started really strong coming off the mm-hmm. explosive season 3 finale. And I thought it ended mm-hmm. incredibly strong, but the middle was just a little soft for me.
It was a little bit like, especially like when they were getting so mad about like the which writers are going to hire and this writer and that. And like it was a little.
Too mad for too long. That season mm-hmm. could have dealt with like 2 fewer episodes and it would have been fantastic. It maybe made yeah. best. I mentioned the Survivor Australia versus the World was very close to a best. Severance mm-hmm. season 2 was close to a best. And then a couple unscripted, but more documentary series.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think everyone loved this because it was a different and weird way into food content. But I mm-hmm. quite enjoyed Knife Edge on Apple, which is about like chasing Michelin stars in each episode where they're in like a different region or city, and they embedded with restaurants that are, you know, Michelin level, if not already there, looking for more, right on the cusp, looking to get their first star, really engaging and like super cute host. I'm like, I hate watching people eat and listening to people eat, but this guy, I give him a pass. It was quite mm-hmm. wonderful. And just like really cool stories, like where you and I come from and, you know, Unscripted and Doc series. I'm like, incredible access. You know, what deal they made with the Michelin folks was pretty phenomenal. They never actually outed any of the Michelin inspectors, and I thought in a really interesting way. It just became a different way to like embed with restaurants, but like of the fine dining variety, and see really what it takes to be like on that absolute, absolute upper crust level. And I think post the Bear, mm-hmm. it's a really fun time to watch something like this, because you're like, oh, Carmi actually isn't that psychotic, because look at all these fucking psychos. They're all like this. They're all like this. It's crazy.
Okay.
What else was on yours?
On mine, so like I said, I had Hacks. I also had Squid Game. I really, like, it was funny because—
Didn't finish it.
I feel like, oh, Danny, yeah, it was, it—
And you implored me to, and I still couldn't muster up the engagement. I couldn't get there. I tried.
Oh, I loved it. But I could also see how, like, it didn't quite make the list. Like, it didn't make the best list, definitely. But like, if I had like a top 10 favorites, it would definitely be in there. Mm-hmm. Cause I just thought, like, it was just wild. The way it ended was just wild. And I was into it.
I should eventually get there. They're doing a US, David Fincher is doing like a US version. So I got to catch up on the canon at some point. So.
Another one that I wanted to make the list, and I was so excited about it coming back. And then it was just like, oh, what did you guys, how did you know? And that is Nobody Wants This.
Didn't even watch.
I love the first season so much.
Reviews were so mixed, bordering on bad, that I didn't even jump into it.
It just, I don't know. Like it just did. I just don't think that it worked. And I don't know, maybe that's the problem with having a show that's based on like these unlikely romances, you know?
Right.
I'm tired of that storyline. It's okay, great. You're a rabbi and she's not.
What else?
It's just like,
yeah.
And I just wanted to be like, Kristen Bell, just convert.
What? Yeah.
Like, what's the deal? Like, just like, you don't have to even really believe it.
Like, I almost feel like it would have been better served as like, add an extra episode or two, tie it off and make it, it could have been a one season miniseries and been phenomenal, you know?
Yeah. I also, and I think that this was another one that you didn't really enjoy, but like, I just really enjoyed every episode of it, was The Studio.
No, I did enjoy it.
Oh, you did enjoy it. Okay.
Darren and Christian hated it. I picked it in our draft as my first pick, because I rightly, mind you, predicted that it would be nominated for tons and win several Emmys, which it did. Mm-hmm. I still really like the show, and I'm kind of surprised. I had it somewhere on a list. I don't know why I didn't make it to at least an almost list, because it should have been. Like, I liked it a lot. I thought it was super well done. Looking forward to the second season. Like, big fan of The Studio. Just don't ask our friends Darren and Christian. They both hated it.
No, I thought it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And then what other ones? I had a few shows that like I should have watched and I definitely still want to watch. And I think one of them you had recommended to me, which is Dying for Sex, the Michelle mm-hmm. Williams
yes.
one.
Another one that was like just right on the outside of best shows. But again, it felt like we've talked about it already and I wanted mm-hmm. to get some new blood in there.
Yeah.
But Dying for Sex, fantastic for sure.
And then this other show that like I can't believe that I didn't know about. But as I was just kind of like refreshing myself on kind of what came out this year, this came up, and it is a show on Netflix called Death by Lightning.
Watched it. Enjoyed. Thought it was good.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked it.
And it just feels like it's right up my alley. It's about the assassination of President James Garfield. He was assassinated 4 months into office,
yes.
died 2 months after.
Ulysses S. Grant is invoked, obviously.
Yeah.
I liked it. For me, weirdly, like I thought it was great. You have Tom Wamsgams, what's his face? What's the actor's name?
Mm-hmm. Matthew
McFadden. Thank you. The thing about it to me is like, it kind of came and went because it's so short. It's four episodes.
Yeah, it's only four episodes, which I was like,
so I'm like, it felt to me, it almost hit more of like my movie brain than my TV brain. Cause I like, I just watched it all in a day and just felt like this nice contained little story.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really thought about it since. Like in the moment, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is really good. It's a fun way to do historical fiction and cool, good performances, but it just didn't quite stick for me. So I kind of mm-hmm. forgot about it. All right, let's do this. Let's do a quick little recap. Mm-hmm. All right, so like a very robust list. This also doesn't include, by the way, and I'm normally I start the podcast by saying how many seasons of television I watched. I didn't this time because I'm a little bit embarrassed by it because the number's huge. It's fucking gargantuan. This also was the year that, you know, our industry continues to implode upon itself. I've been a bit more underemployed than I would have liked to have been this year. On the flip side of that, it gave me a lot more time to watch shows. So in addition to, I think, like 65 plus new seasons of television, I also watched 25 rewatches of shows, plus some another 10 seasons of shows that weren't new this year, but were new to me. So all told, I've watched like 100 seasons of television this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Some of the rewatches were great. I rewatched all of Lost and Leftovers, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. we did that around our Mystery Box episode. Loved it. Couple mm-hmm. things, like before new seasons come out, I'll rewatch, you know, season one of Andor. I rewatch The Bear, you know, Severance, Diplomat, things like that. Rewatch Stranger Things, of course. And then I'm currently embarking on a rewatch of The West Wing, but then also periodically studded with The Newsroom.
A lot of walking and talking.
A lot of walking and talking. I've loved it so much. The West Wing will be making a reappearance on my criteria when we update. I can tell you that much.
Okay.
All that is to say, though, I've watched far too much television this year, but I think are the 15 shows that we've landed on are a pretty good representation of what was going on this year. So to quickly recap, our shared mm-hmm. best shows of 2025 are The Pitt on HBO, mm-hmm. Adolescence on Netflix, The Rehearsal Season 2 on HBO, Pluribus on Apple TV, and The Righteous Gemstones Season 4 also on HBO. HBO getting a lot mm-hmm. of love.
HBO doing
love
it.
Love to see it. Love to see it. Mm-hmm.
And my five favorite shows, All Her Fault on Peacock, The Summer I Turned Pretty on Amazon Prime, Hunting Wives on Netflix, Forever also on Netflix, and Overcompensating, which is on Amazon Prime. Look at me watching all the Amazon Prime shows.
I know, really standing up for Prime. That's crazy. and then my five favorites of the year were an international version of The Traitors, Ireland, Andor Season 2 on Disney Plus. Heated Rivalry, which is a Canadian show, originally, I want to say, on Crave. I will give them their proper mm-hmm. due, but airing in the United States on HBO. Task, also HBO, and SNL 50, which I guess you could say is both NBC and Peacock.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great list.
That's a list. That's a mm-hmm. good list.
I think there's something in there for everybody.
I know. Great year of content. Great year of chatting with you about all the content. I always love it. We, as usual, have a bit of an irregular podcasting schedule. We both have lots of stuff going on. We will certainly be back in 2026 mm-hmm. with what and how frequently remains to be seen, but we will be back. So until next time, goodbye, friends.
Bye, friends.
You've arrived here at a critical moment.